You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Boardwalk Audio Podcast.
We got your favorite sports and we got your favorite team.
Big Red, go, go.
Big Red,
go, go.
Way out in California, but we represent the scene.
Big Red,
go, go.
Big Red,
go, go. Pat, Joe, and Tweety are here to make some noise. We got a podcast. We're based at Galliano and Boyd. Big Red,
go, go.
Big Red,
go, go.
Big Red,
go, go.
Yeah.
Big
Red Copcast. I'm Pat.
And I'm Joe. And that's
Is that an imitation of me?
No. It was just realizing that there won't be any Tweety today, so I had
there
to get
is
in
not.
There.
He's helping move a CrossFit gym.
Second time he's done that in like a month.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I think that's the new CrossFit scam is actually... getting people.
You'll get your
I think
workout.
We talked about this. Didn't we
just
talk about this one
business.
Episode?
What?
Yes. I thought maybe you weren't in the episode, but I feel like at some point there was a Cobcast episode where we were talking about a business where it's an exercise thing, but all it is moving the equipment.
I mean,
if you're never
that's
using
effective.
It. I mean, I've moved my own shit a number of times. But helping someone like that is a freaking chore, helping somebody move.
Well, and when you think about some of the exercises that CrossFit gyms use, like swinging sledgehammers at tires or stuff like that, I mean, it's basically physical labor in its own. Like
there's no isometric study on any of it. It's just do this shit.
The gym I went to in Burbank didn't have any of that, because like in a city, like the amount of space you have is limited. But then like one time, yeah. I was back here for the holidays and went to one in Norfolk, Nebraska, and yeah, it was all that kind of stuff, and it was actually weirdly fun. But I'm like,
sure,
oh okay, yeah, we don't have any of this tractor tire stuff in Burbank.
No, there's no room for that.
No,
they have nothing but tractor tires out in western Nebraska.
Well, hold up. We're not in western.
Not. Okay. Where are you? You're in northern Nebraska, right?
Northeast Nebraska, yeah.
Northeast.
About an hour from Sioux City, Iowa.
Okay.
So, like, right.
I got it. You're up right, on that the curve of the state.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Basically right where Nebraska, South Dakota, and Iowa all meet.
Okay.
A little inland from there, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So how far from Lincoln are you? You got to be two and a half hours.
That's probably a pretty good guess, actually.
I'm just thinking of the geography, looking in the state there.
Yeah.
And you're further from Omaha. You're west of Lincoln.
No. It's probably we're probably a little closer to Omaha than Lincoln. Lincoln's a little further south.
So if you draw a triangle, I got it now. I see kind of where you are in my head.
Yeah.
Not that it matters.
Lincoln's a little further south than Omaha. And as far as like easy, like highways that dump you off.
That's what you need is to get to a highway.
Yeah. I mean, not that there aren't. I mean, it's not like it's all dirt roads up here.
Oh, God, no.
Although, to be fair, we are in a town of like 400 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. There are. Did anybody score? Oh, man, City already scored. It's over. There are. What was I going to say? Oh, shit. I was going to say something about that area. Oh, the highways. 80 goes right through Omaha and Lincoln.
Yeah.
We used to take that when we lived in New York. The two or three times I remember driving Nebraska to New York was all on 80.
Yeah. Once you start to get west of Lincoln, but haven't reached like the panhandle, that's what everyone thinks Nebraska is when it's flat. But I think there's some pretty interesting scenery.
I've really not driven that direction much, except the one time I drove Chicago to LA and we went through Lincoln to stop my childhood home. That's the only time I think I could really have been west of Lincoln in Nebraska much, you know, so yeah. I don't have too much experience with that.
Nebraskans just view Western Nebraska like this foreign land. And
it's
basically
like upstate New York.
Yeah. And basically anything west of Lincoln, even though like Lincoln is easily in the eastern third, anything west of Lincoln, people are like, oh, you guys are out in the panhandle.
Panhandle. Right. That's the term for the sticks.
Well, I mean, the panhandle is in a different time zone.
It is? Yeah. Mountain starts in the panhandle?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, and actually, once you get out to central Nebraska, there's a different area code, too.
You're blowing my mind.
Yeah, everyone thinks of Nebraska as the 402, but there's also the 308. Like, that's what Scott Frost has 308 on his hat, you know, when they put the area codes on there. Yeah. Our
representing the 308.
Our Husker Watch site co-host Brett Moline, he's from Minden, and he lost his mind when Frost came out with the 308 on his hat, and Tweety's like, "What the hell number is that?" I'm like, well, there's more than one area code in Nebraska.
Oh my God! Yes, there's 10,000 people who have that area code.
I think there's a third area code now for like the
what?
For the Omaha metro area. They're
nice.
Well, just because they started to run out of numbers.
Sure.
But by the way, I looked it up. It's about 2 hours from here to either Omaha or Lincoln. It's a little under 2 hours to Omaha and a little over 2 hours to Lincoln. It's about 10 minutes.
There you
difference.
Go. Well, that's where we place you north in the state there. Okay. So just triangulate everybody that way if you want to figure out exactly where Pat is. Of course, a town of 400 people, it probably wouldn't be hard to find.
Now it's just a matter of figuring out which town of 400 people, because there are a lot of them around here.
Yes. And then you have to go outside. So it'd be hard for them to find you.
We'll be the only ones walking around wearing soccer jerseys.
Yes, true. So this was a good intro to the state of Nebraska.
Yes,
and
yes,
the geography
yes.
of Nebraska, a little lesson and all that. There is
the people who already live here will be like, come on, guys, we know this.
I know the area
codes. Or they'll like people actually love going over things about Nebraska that they already know. So maybe they like it. And then people in like our California Huskers or our Vegas Huskers or Arizona, wherever they happen to be, they'll be like, oh, yeah. Forgot about that about Nebraska.
Good. We refreshed you. Now, we got refreshed out of the volleyball tournament by Texas. And it's you know, the fact that we're talking about the volleyball tournament first or second after geography lessons.
Correct.
But next week is the spring game. So hang on, folks. But let's get back to volleyball.
Hey, I mean, it's a big sport in Nebraska. Like, you know,
and the tournament was in Omaha, and you know, we made it to the Elite Eight again.
Yeah.
And then Texas were jerks.
Yeah. Since 82, we've made it to the Sweet 16 or farther every year but two.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Amazing.
Well, and then two, so like Nebraska has like four of the top recruits in the nation coming in next year, but like
they do. I thought it was this year they had those,
or this coming year.
Oh, nice.
Well, I mean, they do that almost every year, but the thing of it is, like, you know, you want to talk about like Nebraska, but then also like small town Nebraska, and but then just how big volleyball is in the state. Like every year there are like two top 50 recruits at least from like rural Nebraska.
Yeah,
it
which
always
is,
feels like
when you have a sport that has two top 50 athletes from a state that small, that's crazy.
Yeah, like and people really take it seriously here, and I love the sport. I think it's a fun sport.
I also think it is a fun sport to watch, and it's great to play. It's a fun, super fun game to play. You know, it's like it's similar to basketball and the athleticism and the movements and stuff, but you're in a smaller space. And I think it's pretty cool for a state like Nebraska. Not every area that small has a concentrated sport kind of that I think it's smart in a way, not that it was on purpose or anything, but it's like, here's a sport like Northwestern's women's lacrosse is like nationally ranked. And it's like, what the hell? Why, how, and whatever. And now the SEC has decided to get into lacrosse, and like Florida had their entire recruiting class go to the national championships with signs like the Gators are coming, the Gator, you know, because I think they were like, well, if Northwestern can win a national championship in this, we just put $2 million into it and then we'll have a national title program.
Well, that's basically what they've done with volleyball in recent years too. It's earlier than that.
Obviously, yes.
But
yes.
The championship in volleyball this year was Big 12 and SEC. And it was, you know, so conferences that really put a huge emphasis on the sports side of things, and they take it really seriously. And I think you see that with baseball too, like sports that are good and fun college sports, but maybe not everyone has caught up with, but they pour money into them,
and you can get more bang for your buck if you pour money into a sport like that. If you pour money into football, you could pour millions into football and still have a 3-6 season or whatever it may be.
But I would put volleyball ahead of like lacrosse as far as like I'd say it's a little bit more mainstream than lacrosse, because lacrosse is very niche. It's basically either East Coast or like far west, like middle of
the few, and the West Coast did the same thing where they didn't have lacrosse, but then they realized, oh, we could play all year round, and so the West Coast got in on it. That was the first kind of, you know, other area that started to grab it.
Like Denver weirdly got into it.
Yes. Well, that fits the Denver kind of, because there's this kind of faux hippie type of element to lacrosse, I think. It's a money sport.
It's a money sport. Exactly.
Like when you're talking about these volleyball players and stuff in Western Nebraska and everything, that's not, you know, like you can play volleyball on a basketball court.
Yeah.
You could play lacrosse too. You know, you could play lacrosse where you play baseball. But now that the Native Americans have been wiped out, the only people playing are rich white kids. You know, you'll see a story of like, oh, upstate New York, you know, there was a team of Iroquois players, like Syracuse will have like New York Native American players occasionally make on their roster, because that's where the sport started. But weren't they using people's heads instead of the ball?
You know, that doesn't seem like that would make sense because that lacrosse ball is not very big.
Right. Maybe they shrink the head, then they use it as a lacrosse
ball. That feels insensitive, Joe.
True. But a lot of these games that are seemingly like soccer and everything start out of these like battle games where they use like a captured prisoner's head as the ball. I don't know that true. I shouldn't suggest that lacrosse was that necessarily, but it'd be kind of cool.
Also,
you need a bigger basket.
Wasn't soccer established so like it was a sport that discouraged kids from using their hands,
yes,
so they wouldn't masturbate.
Masturbation.
Where did I hear
that? Yes, I heard that too. Maybe there was an article about that or something. That's strange. You said that, and I remember the same thing.
Yeah.
It was to encourage them to not use their hands.
Yeah.
And what it did is it ended up creating the hooligan. So it backfired tremendously.
Do hooligans masturbate a lot?
You got to think they do. You have to assume there's probably, when they're not in public, there's just furious private masturbating going on.
Everything is furious with the hooligan.
Tweety would be a hooligan if he was a soccer fan. If he grew up in England, no doubt he'd be a hooligan.
Yeah. Well, because that tracks, because the reason he's a Husker fan isn't the state part, it's the hometown thing.
Yes,
like you grew up hometown, and then like he loves to talk trash and be mad.
He would love being
if he grew up in like Lincolnshire rather than Lincoln, he would be like, he'd be a Lincoln Town hooligan. And that would also track too, because they're stuck in the lower tiers of English football now.
Yeah.
He would be. They're red and white.
We got to point that out, as that should be his team, a third division British team.
Cause I forget who he ended up being a fan of. When we gave him a soccer team. Oh, yeah, Newcastle.
Yeah, right.
No, I still think good. He should have gone with Burnley, because Sean Dyche is basically the closest thing to a hooligan as a soccer manager.
Who is he? Is he the
Burnley manager?
Yes, Burnley. Great. They killed somebody today. We can't talk too much about
Premier
League. So we did our little, I'm sorry.
Well, hold up. There's still the conversation in there. With volleyball, you hit at it a little bit. Man, they were dicks. Like,
yeah. Yes, Texas. Back to the rubbing it in.
I always thought like it was a little ridiculous how in Tweety's documentary, there are people who are like, you know, in our house, we learned a few things like we love say please and thank you. We love Nebraska and we hate Texas. I'm like, that isn't what I like. Texas was an interloper. I didn't like Texas. I thought fuck Texas for sure. But like they just were a different animal to me
not the same reason you say it about Colorado or Oklahoma.
Yeah, but there were, I guess, generations of fans who grew up thinking they were our biggest rival. I'm like, I don't know. They just beat us all the time. And like, we didn't really get to call them a rival because we didn't earn that. But
we headed into playing them during one of their great periods of time.
Yeah. But like that shit that they were pulling on social media with volleyball. And I get like, they were totally just like relishing the heel turn being in Nebraska. Like they had a couple tweets.
Yes.
One that they left up, one that was just, you know, like basically calling Nebraska their territory or whatever. And then having a very poorly photoshopped image of like a longhorn into a cornfield. Yes. But then the, like, whatever, talk trash, like also, I don't know, win with some class, I feel like. But like,
well, they didn't win.
But then the Lexi Sun tweet, like, and then Texas fans being like, well, you know, she spilled tea when she left. I don't know, man. She's also like 20. Like, I've handled social media accounts for college sports teams. Like, and
social media is an unfair thing, and it has a, whether you want to admit it or not, social media has a bent towards intolerance.
Yeah. But I mean, that was an adult, presumably, who put that tweet up. And I guess,
of course,
Lexi Sun is legally an adult now too, but also like, Jesus Christ, you beat her. Isn't that enough?
Yeah. What was the exact tweet? She transferred from there, right?
Yeah. Well, they have a player named Skylar, who I'm presuming they call Sky, but they said today's forecast, all sky, no sun.
Oh.
Like,
I mean, that's clever for them. Yeah. It just, it's fine with a heel turn because I know the sport is popular in Nebraska, but I think something like that is okay nationally. We're the victims of it, so we're a little pissed at it. But I think for the sport, it's actually probably okay in that it gets some attention there. So that if Texas plays Nebraska, they'll have something to talk about.
But like outside of Nebraska, like,
you think that
we love volleyball, but like, will that gain any traction outside of, like,
I mean, Texas and Nebraska? Probably not.
Plus, like, in all likelihood, Lexi Sun's college career is done unless she decides she wants to take that extra year of eligibility.
Extra year. You can make so
that
money.
That's
Europe.
What makes it feel even worse. It's like, oh, you're just dunking on a person on their last game. Like, get out of here. Like, that's,
yeah.
It felt punk move ish for two reasons. One, you take the heel turn when there are like limited crowds. And then also, two, you do that when you're probably never going to see her on the floor again.
Like, right.
I don't know, man. And then they
pull
the tweet.
You're saying.
They pull
it's
the
like,
tweet anyway.
It's fake bravery. It's fake bravado.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, yeah, do that shit, like you said, when you've won the whole thing.
Right. Well, that's the other thing that, you know, that's what you get for talking shit before the final.
And you lose to a former Husker assistant.
And don't think that that wasn't something in his, you know, like, I feel like assistants always have a loyalty to the guy who they, you know, obviously if they're playing him, he's going to want to beat him. But if he's not playing him, he's going to be loyal to him against any other team. And not that you need extra motivation in a finals, but it probably is nice to be like, well, I just shut you guys up, so you won't be doing any more of that for a while.
Yeah. I don't know. It is always fun to see Texas lose. I wish it would have been to us. But I will say
yes.
From a purely objective point of view, they were the better team in that match. They looked really good throughout the tournament. I didn't watch last night's championship match. Maybe that was the difference. I just needed to not watch them, but they looked sharp. I was not surprised that they beat us.
They had a woman on their team. I watched 5 minutes of the final, but Texas had a woman who was just like, you know, I would think she could have been like a power forward or something on the basketball team, just tall and like, doing everything she could to keep them in the game.
Yeah, their middles and outside hitters were all just really, really good athletes.
As you would think.
Yeah. But as you said, you know, there are other things to move on to, including we got the spring game coming up.
Yes, that will be our, you know, we're trying to manufacture football stuff here, but next week it's going to be all football because I assume I already recorded it or set the recording, I should say. If I recorded it, that'd be weird.
I was going to say, be like where the hell did you get that recording device? That's like a Mitch Hedberg joke right there. This is a picture of me when I was younger.
I love Mitch Hedberg. So you know, now it's all the anticipation. And before we got started recording, you and I were talking about the quarterback situation. And I guess we'll see a little bit in the spring game where everything is. But it seems like they are happy with what they have, which is good in a way. But if they don't take a quarterback, that means we are more than likely looking at Harburg or
Smothers
at some point this season, because Martinez has not made it through a whole season yet.
Yeah. But I mean, because Martinez is a senior, we have to see both of those guys this year.
Yeah.
We absolutely have to.
That's why I think a Terry Wilson, he may not be willing to. That's the problem. He'd be perfect for us, but are we perfect for him?
Someone who would be better than Smothers or Harburg, is going to want to, if they're a grad transfer, they're going to want to go somewhere where they can play. So I think whether it's Terry Wilson or someone else, I think that's a huge ask. B, is it worth it if to have someone come on and take extra reps who might not even be better than those two and potentially stymies development?
That's maybe what I'm missing here.
The only I think the grad transfer likelihood or possibility would be someone who recognizes their ceiling as a player, is smart, could manage things, pick things up quickly, recognize that they're going to be secondary to the scholarship guys, but ultimately says, I really want to be a head coach someday. And this could be really, really good experience for me. Now, with the difficulty that we've had the last few years, will that be enticing? If it had been Scott Frost 3 years ago, I think
somebody's lining up for that. Yeah.
I think you could lay that recruiting pitch onto somebody. That's a tough sell right now, though.
And I mean, how many 22-year-old quarterbacks are already thinking about? I mean, maybe there are some thinking down the line of being a coach or whatever.
That's
advanced thinking for a 22-year-old.
I think there are some. Well, I mean, that's the kind of advanced thinking that you want in a head coach, though, too, down the line.
True.
I think
the
level of quarterback that we're probably going to get in that potential role, if the recruiting pitch is honest, is probably about the level of what we would get from our current top walk-on in Matt Masker.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Masker's
I think
probably one of those guys looking down the line to coach.
Yeah. If someone falls in your lap, sure, you got to consider it. I just think that's going to be I think you have to manage your resources a little bit. And manage your expectations too. You should keep your ear to the ground.
This is the craziest year of recruiting thus far, I think, in college football history, with all the kids in the portal, the new rule changes coming into effect all at once, along with this year of total, you know, craziness in so many programs. That combination has just made this flood of players and a lack of information like nowhere before, at least with transfer players. Although most of the guys transferring, there's probably not a lot of film on them because they didn't play as much.
But lost their job. That's happened in Alabama a lot.
Yes. Well, yes. Right. And a guy like that, I'll take a guy who lost the job at Alabama now. Well, there's that one recruit who from Alabama who was like a number one recruit, went to Colorado. It didn't work out there. There's some lineman who was at Alabama.
Linebacker.
And he's still in the portal again.
Kid from New Jersey who I think has some psychological demons, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Did he, like, he transferred to Rutgers at some point.
That might have been after Colorado, because he went to Colorado from Alabama and then he left Colorado. Well, Rutgers would make sense, I suppose.
What's that?
It's closer to home if it's Rutgers.
I mean, that, that may be the thing that he needs, or or maybe the thing that he absolutely doesn't need. I mean, that could go either way there.
Well, Colorado may have been a bad thing. Maybe too much weed. Boulder's a big smoking town, I would guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, any college town, whether it whether there's legal weed or not, but
Nebraska has had plenty of players smoking weed in Lincoln, and it wasn't legal then. Yeah,
it's just a whether or not they're being hauled out of their dorm room in the process.
Yes, right.
What was I going to say?
Oh, I had something I wanted to say. Go ahead after yours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think I'm going to probably contradict myself and prove your point a little bit, but like, I don't doubt that Harburg has had a good spring. Well, I guess I do. I wonder, like, because they're the way things have been pitched to us over the years, as far as spring goes, like what can we buy and what can't we buy? Like, I think of things like, oh, Heinrich Harburg looks great in the spring, or, oh, this walk-on running back Yant,
That's what I wanted to talk about. Yes, is looking great, but that is that a good thing? Is that a good thing when you got a guy who's a? I know he was supposed to be a scholarship guy, talent wise, in some ways, but
Yant and he may be a scholarship guy by the end, by the start of the season. It sounds like
sure, but it's but and if that's the case, that's good. But there's also a little bit of like, okay, are you just scholarshipping guys who are playing hard and showing up and they still, that's great in practice and everything, but when we get to a Big Ten schedule, it may not be everything that it's cracked up to be. I don't know. I'm just saying that, you know, our running back situation is tenuous.
But it also is a possibility because, I mean, whenever someone...
He's a big guy, too.
Yeah. Whenever someone comes in as a walk-on and you're like, and then people talk about it, it's like, well, what made that person a walk-on? And there can be a number of things that cause that. A lot of times it could be academics, it could be that a person got in trouble off the field, it could be that they're from a small town and they didn't get a lot of exposure, or that it's not easy for them to get to camps, or in this case, because he was going to be a senior last year, I believe is the case, and then didn't have a season, and so then came to Nebraska to join them. And so he hasn't had necessarily the full recruiting opportunity. And maybe we just nabbed him before anybody else really got a chance to see him. Although he's from Florida, so you would assume.
And there was a few of those.
What's that?
Right. Yeah, I was just kind of agreeing with you. Like, we've done that a few times with players to different degrees of success, you know, taking these guys that were under the radar or whatever, and now are showing up well for us, hopefully. I'm trying to think of another guy. There was a guy who was injured who had an Ohio State offer. John.
How long ago are you
living? Last year or the year before. He had knee injuries. He didn't end up doing anything.
Bivens.
Yeah, stuff like that. We've done things like that before. I'm thinking of the lineman we got who was in Ohio. Now, this is different. These guys are scholarship. The lineman who was an Iowa player we got.
Oh, Ezra.
Oliver Miller. Yeah. These guys who they're up, you know, it's we're getting a lot of, and that's what the portal is completely. But it seems like we're really leaning on that for some position, not just for depth, but for players who will contribute. And I don't know if that is good or bad right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in this state of the program, you have to do that. You have to take some
everybody who can play. Yeah.
Gambles. Although I will say, you know, it is dicey. I do think, I do think it was a huge, looking back in hindsight, I think Maurice Washington was a huge locker room setback, not because he got in trouble, but because he was apparently a guy who would do things his own way. And they let him get by with it. Yeah. And I get, like, certain guys with certain talent are going to do, like, that's going to sometimes happen with coaches. But if you come in and say, we got to change this culture and everyone's got to be on board, and then you do that, like, that's a mixed message. And
yes, so, like, and early on when you're trying to seeing everything as it is now in hindsight, dumping him at the first opportunity would have been the better move.
Yeah.
Instead of continuing, but his talent was so intriguing, they gave him opportunity after opportunity. But like you're saying, for the program, if you're coming in and you're trying to set this tone of establishing, you know, a new level of discipline in the program, it's so hard to take what was probably your best talent and make him the example. You know, like,
but also
it's too,
like,
bad, but
also, like, I mean, he was good. He had some flash to him, but, like, we didn't win more than five games those 2 years anyway.
He's no better than Abdullah was, as it turns out. Now, Abdullah was a pro-level 10-year career in the NFL running back.
Abdullah is Abdullah was a lot better running back than Maurice Washington. Partly because of what was between the ears, because he was a tough running back, B, a smart running back, C, just dedicated as hell. He had some wiggle. He could go inside or outside the tackles. Maurice Washington was a little bit one-dimensional.
And Abdullah had, his big runs were impactful. Yeah. Like, he had big runs when they needed big runs.
Yeah.
None more than that big one, obviously, where they won the game.
Oh,
but I just think.
I will dispute that. By the way,
the program had
his biggest offensive play was on that drive that led to the Hail Mary against Northwestern, because
a catch out of the backfield or something
to keep a drive alive. He just got to the sticks.
Yeah. I think I kind of remember. Okay. And then they had that other play. I mean, he was just, who knew we would miss him as much as we did. Ryan did, I guess.
I think a lot of people.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, I didn't, you know, in retrospect, we miss him even more. I just think there were so many, whether you want to say it was circumstance or missteps or whatever, whether it's that and having to kind of make accommodations for players you didn't want to have to make, bad breaks, the thunderstorm. I know we're talking about 4 years ago, but it's just like the early steps of this program, some of those missteps, it feels like we're still stumbling because of it. We've never gotten our footing. We started out stumbling down the hill and we haven't gotten our footing yet.
But at some point, resiliency has to step into play. And
yes,
this program has shown none of it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this senior class is now his freshman class, right? His first freshman class.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of them are still juniors. Actually, they all could be if they want to be. But yeah, Adrian Martinez and that class, they're in their fourth season at Nebraska. And resiliency can show up at any point. Like, dudes who've seen nothing but losing records, including some guys who got there before Frost, like Matt Sickerman came in under Riley. Like,
yes.
Nothing would show resiliency more than dudes who've seen four straight losing seasons popping
coming out in
fifth year. Like, so, like, that's not to say it can't be shown, but it is starting to be put up or shut up time.
And you know, again, the fact that Nebraska fans have taken this long to get to the put up or shut up, you're lucky. Frost and company, that we love you so much, you know, like, but yeah, and I know we're you know, Ryan, I think sometimes finds reasons to not, especially when there's not a lot to talk about. He'd rather move furniture than do this episode. But I think some of it comes out of his, you know, being such a huge rah-rah hooligan type fan, and there's nothing to hooligan right now, and it gets frustrating. So, you know, we've played this game so many times.
And
this is the last hand.
That may be the ultimate genius of Bill Moose hiring someone like Scott Frost. Like, it's easy to say, like, oh God, we always look for the former Husker, and like we do. And part of it is like a little bit of PR, but like, so he, maybe there was a better candidate out there. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to lure that candidate. And I think that's our assumption. We think like, oh, well, we got Frost because we knew we could probably get him in ways that we wouldn't be able to get other coaches. But maybe the ultimate intelligence of the move is recognizing this is a build it from the bottom up coaching job, and it's gonna take at least 5 years.
And there's no other coach we would give 5 years.
None. Zero. Zilch. Like, even coming off of Riley's 4-8 season,
yeah,
if we had two coaches come in, or if we had any other random coach besides Scott Frost come in and have the records that he's had,
he'd be gone.
They would be gone by now. They would already, like,
and that would put us even further back.
Yeah, like, I'm not even sure that, let's just say Dan Mullen, I don't know, whoever.
Sure, great. That's
let's
good.
Say he, let's say he comes in instead of Scott Frost and wins 4 and 5 games in his first two seasons. I'm not sure he makes year three.
You're right. You're right. I agree with you. I think ultimately that you've stumbled on something there. And Moose said when he was hired that it wasn't going to be a direct turnaround.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he and Frost both said this needs a long runway.
And maybe that's it. We shouldn't be surprised at that guys who know what they're talking about looked at this and said, this is a complete tear down and build up.
That's what always,
but we're just not used to hearing that.
That's what always confounds me when people are like, oh, well, Frost and Moose came in and talked shit right away. And so if they're going to do that, they should win right away. I'm like, did you listen to the whole press conference?
Yeah.
Like, press conferences have to have a little bit of bravado. That's kind of, they are essentially pep rallies.
Of course, like, it's a PR thing.
Everyone seizes on the, well, I hope the Big Ten has to adjust to us. He said, I hope the Big Ten has to adjust to us. He didn't say the Big Ten will have to adjust to us. And he also said, this is going to require a long runway. Did you not hear that part too? Everyone just wants to seize on the things that they want to hear. Like when I heard that first, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is a good reality check for myself, because I'm like, okay, yep. That is this may
take a minute.
And
it's the head heart thing. It's the head heart thing, because your head says all the stuff and listens to that, but they couldn't have made a better move for your heart than Frost.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of a conflict there of like, yes, the choice of the perfect choice, really. And you have to acknowledge that 90% of Nebraska fans would have viewed this as the perfect coaching hire at the time, I think.
It was the one that they absolutely had to make.
Yes. And so that, you know, we're thrilled with it. But the amount that we are thrilled with it is not matching with the reality of what we have to endure first.
Yeah.
Now we'll make, you know, and I know we've been saying this, but if we do somehow get some success out of this, we'll feel like Texas, you know, doing the heel turn and saying, F you, everybody.
We're going
if
to
and when it
so-
happens.
Unbearable as a fan base.
Can you imagine if we just beat Iowa this year, what Tweedy's going to be like on Twitter? He's going to look back for the last 6 years at anybody who wrote to him on the Nebraska loss game, and he'll just write back to them. He'll do more Twitter research than he's ever done before. Find them all.
I don't know that he loves doing that level of research for that kind of thing.
I don't. But I'm just, that's what I'm saying. He'd be driven to that.
A couple years ago, that would have been my kind of pettiness for that. But now, like, it will take a few consecutive wins to start talking trash to Iowa, because right now they'll do essentially what Nebraska fans have always done, where it's like, we beat you. I'm like, yeah, well, we beat you the last 9,000 times. Right now we're in the boat that Iowa had been in for years. I mean, we've still beaten them, beaten us, but when you take into account recent history,
true.
Although we do have the crutch of, oh, I thought the past didn't matter.
Yes. They've been pulling that on us.
Yeah.
I am a little reluctant to make this analogy, but I'm going to go through with it anyway, where, like, if we become good again, it's probably going to be like, at least for me, like what it was when Trump lost, where I was like, oh, I'm going to be dancing on everyone's, you know, and after he lost, it was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like if Nebraska wins, rather than be like, you know, going out and lashing out at everybody, I think I'm just going to take a deep breath and be like, oh, thank God. Thank God they're not coming after me.
And to further out the parallel, depending on what game we're talking about in the season, if it's like a middle of the season win against Wisconsin, there will still be a lot of season left, and that will be the equivalent of potential recounts.
Right. Deep breath with another deep breath to come.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Iowa game, that could ruin the whole season for us.
Yeah, that could be people trying to start the Capitol on fire.
and again, you know, it'd be great for us to win one of these games, because once I think we do, then we're going to have the rivalry, you know, like I always had all of the, yeah, it's a rivalry because we're kicking your ass. So they can, you know, they can call it a rivalry and we're like, yeah, it's not a rivalry. We haven't won. But if we won, we might be more into it.
The Big Ten series between the two schools still isn't that far off, because like we had early success against them joining the conference, because they tend to go to that where it's like, well, what's the record between the two teams since joining the Big Ten? I'm like, well, honestly, it's actually not that different. No. It's just you have dominated the recent success, which is infuriating. I tell you, the one thing that would change that dynamic that I talked about, where like, hey, we haven't won in a while, would be to go hang half a hundred on them. If there's any sort of like emphatic victory, because their last few have been not impressive.
No, we could have, maybe should have won at least a couple of the last three or four we've played them.
Yeah. Well, the last three, especially.
Yeah.
The end of the Riley run was not fun.
No. But everybody was out at that point.
The last couple under Riley were pretty gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that's exactly the type of game a Riley team's going to get the shit kicked out of them in, where it's like, oh, here's a team that's built on toughness and discipline, and the players probably have gotten yelled at a couple times, versus Riley, where it's like, it's all right, guys. We're all going to get ice cream after the game anyway.
Yeah. Man, it's so weird that there's a Mike Riley regime in the history of Nebraska football. I mean, honestly, if you think about like Bill Callahan, or it's not even that completely normal to think of, like, so Bo Pelini, like part of the reason that he ended up with his very first head coaching job being at Nebraska was because he spent 1 year as the defensive coordinator and had a pretty good year as the defensive coordinator, but not
he won the ball game as an interim. right? Didn't they do that?
Yeah. But like,
that was it.
His year at Nebraska was an improvement from that last year of Callahan's defense, but not by a lot. Like, he started out hot and then got torched a few times. Like when he went and got mad at Bill Snyder for running up the score, which, as my dad will say, know your history. You don't get to go do that after
we've beaten Kansas State by 70 a couple times.
Yeah, like that was the moment that my dad was out on Pelini, like while he was still defensive coordinator at Nebraska.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a not knowing your culture.
Speaking of Pelini, I'm going to piss a few people off more because they think I'm always like just dumping on Bo, but like, shocker, he left Youngstown State with NCAA violations. Like he bailed then. Like,
oh,
that
well,
guy's I mean, shown his character enough times for me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He's just another football coach.
Yeah.
And Nebraska wants more, and that's why you're saying all these choices seem kind of off-brand, because they were just football coaches. And Auburn is fine with just a football coach, and when they're going to get one with enough recruiting violations and Cam Newton 1 year to get the national championship that they wanted, and it's worth it for them, even though the coach was gone like six games later or whatever it was.
Yeah, Ben was just chilling in his like rich Auburn, Alabama house, like wearing muscle shirts while his daughter was going to prom. Do you remember those pictures?
He's just like that guy came in and they were like, we need somebody to just be able to manage the bag men for this season.
Yeah, because he had a pretty unremarkable turn at Iowa State prior to that.
Yes. And he's done nothing since.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think he's been on TV.
Yeah, but I mean, when you win a national title as a college coach, you figure you could get a couple more jobs after that. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, but anyway, I've got to go empty spin my doctors? Butt anyway.
No, that's not spin doctors. That's who's the
Blues
other
traveler?
Yes. But, you know, that, I saw that guy. Go ahead.
You were about to say you saw him at I.O., didn't you?
I didn't see him at I.O. I saw him in concert, and he was so fat he had to sit in a chair the whole concert, except when he was jamming out on the
harmonica.
So I'll use my kazoo. So he's playing, and then when he jammed out, he'd get up for a second, but he's so fat he couldn't stay up long. So he'd like jam out and then fall back into his chair.
They opening night had him as the guest person once at I.O.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
This may sound really, really nerdy, but I actually really dug the shit out of Blues Traveler.
I've seen him in concert, I think, three times. That guy could play harmonica virtuosely.
I read a whole article once about how, like, it was like a music theory article. They're like, oh, John Popper is clearly a music theory nerd based on the song Hook.
Like, oh.
They dug through Hook, and basically, so they're pointing out that the song Pachelbel's Canon in D was essentially the first like pop music, like mail it in easy song for human consumption, for popular consumption. And like that Hook mapped a lot of things from Canon and D onto that. Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
There's a P-Funk song early on, I guess it was when they were still Parliament, that uses Pachelbel's Canon as the background, and then they, you know, they do a little funky thing on it. But yeah, that, as you mentioned, that it makes sense because it's a very easy rhythm, easy to predict. And so that's good for pop music in your head where you know where it's going, kind of, but it's still, you know, bounces.
The person who wrote the article was saying, so he used to like play piano for churches, and then like during like communion, he'd often get Pachelbel's Canon in D, and how he could basically riff in the middle and no one would know. Like he would throw in other pop songs
in
the middle, and
so
no one
common,
would notice.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Probably a lot of music was built off of a similar structure to that song,
yeah,
which then allows
that,
you know.
That was what he, that was basically what he said too. By the way, John Popper also in the movie Kingpin.
There you go. Great movie. Very good movie. Underrated movie.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like definitely an under, as I think about it, it's a very, very, very good movie. Kind of like Dewey Cox, Walk Hard. I think that's a very good movie that doesn't quite get the credit needs.
Well, I think any use of Woody Harrelson is great. So that makes Kingpin instantly good.
And you got Bill Murray.
Yeah. In his one of his true signature comedic roles. But
yes.
I love how the Farrelly brothers always use like their use of music in like a very straightforward and honest, like dramatic kind of way, like using ELO's Showdown for that final bowling scene. We have drifted away from the Huskers, but
we started away from the Huskers, so we got to them in the middle.
At least we were talking about the state of Nebraska at the very beginning.
That's right.
Anyway, I have lunch and toilet matters to take care of, so I'm going to go. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Cobcast. We're on Facebook.com/Cobcast. Go to Patreon.com/Big Red Cobcast and help us out a little bit, you know.
Pat needs a haircut. I could see some in the back behind his thing.
Dude. I got sweet mullet action going on.
Yeah. Give Pat some money for a haircut, guys.
I like to like pitch without a baseball, like sometimes in the back. Like I've got like Randy Johnson, Jared Weaver, Jeff Weaver kind of thing going on right now.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's working.
Wrong decade for that.
Wrong decade.
Maybe not.
Get up with a lot of things.
Yeah, right. True.
What were you going to say?
No, that's it.
That's it. All right.
That gets it off.
Fatty Rides a Bus.
Fatty Rides a Bus next week, spring game.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.
The Sea of Red, Husker Nation.
See what makes Nebraska fans the greatest fans in college football with a new movie directed by Lincoln native Ryan Tweedy.
Through These Gates.
The perfect gift for Husker fans.
Available on DVD now at huskerfilm.com.